Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be talking about Tesla's autopilot option strategy, more news on Tesla layoffs, an update on that open SpaceX letter that we talked a little bit about yesterday, news on Tesla in China, and more. So we got a little bit of an update today to close the week. Tesla finishing up 1.72%, the Nasdaq up 1.4%. So not quite what we'd want to see with Tesla's beta, but at this point we'll take some green performance to wrap up the week. And Tesla closing at $650.28. We did have some nice market commentary today from Ron Barron. I know there's been a lot of doom and gloom in the markets lately, but Ron Barron, more of a long-term investor, today on CNBC talking about how he views this as a huge buying opportunity, calling it once in a generation. So nice to have a little bit of that bullish perspective in the market sometime, especially from somebody as well-respected as Ron Barron. The other quick note on the markets is that the markets will be closed on Monday in observation of the Juneteenth holiday, new this year as a federally recognized holiday. So no Tesla trading, at least in the US market on Monday. And unless anything crazy happens, probably no Tesla daily episode either. And we'll be back on Tuesday. So getting into the news today, we do have an update from Elon here responding to Trevor Page, Tesla owners online, saying that Tesla is going to be bringing back the enhanced autopilot option. So Tesla did away with this in the United States, at least. I don't know, it's probably been a couple of years now, at least. With the introduction of FSD, Tesla's gone to just standard autopilot included, and FSD as the only option. We have seen enhanced autopilot being available in some parts of Europe, in China, where FSD is a little bit less capable. And now Tesla bringing that back to, it seems like from Elon's response here, to all customers. So what is Enhanced Autopilot? If you're not familiar or don't remember, Enhanced Autopilot is the set of features that includes Navigate on Autopilot, Auto Lane Change, Auto Park, Smart Summon, and then FSD would of course have the traffic lights and stop sign control and Auto Steer on city streets. So these used to not really be all that different, but now with FSD beta, we are starting to see quite a bit of differentiation between these two features. But Enhanced Autopilot really just meant for more of the highway type of stuff. Auto Park, I've never had a great experience with that. Smart Summon, more of a novelty type of feature, though some people definitely find some value in it. So it is definitely a nice option. I think the auto lane change is huge. Navigate on autopilot, I really enjoy. So for some people, it is going to be an interesting option that don't want to pay all the way up for FSD. We did see when Tesla used to offer this, it cost about half the price of FSD. So we don't know exactly what this is going to be offered at, and Tesla varies it a little bit by region. But my best guess is that it would come in at $6,000. With the current FSD price being $12,000. What's interesting about this is if we look at this feature set, this is all stuff that Tesla has deployed, even if it's still sort of in a beta phase. Tesla can get close to recognizing all of the revenue for that right up front with that sale, versus of course with the FSD option. Until they do wide release of city streets, Tesla seems hesitant to recognize all that revenue. So it kind of creates an interesting situation here for the second quarter, where we've got, I've just put a quick example on screen here, where we might see a little bit of shift in how Tesla's profitability shakes out from this update. So let's say, and this could be going forward into Q3 too, but let's say in North America, Tesla sells, you know, 100,000 vehicles. The number there is not important. Obviously, it'd be a little bit higher than that, most likely, but just for simple math. Let's say for 100,000 vehicles, the take rate on FSD was somewhere around 10%. Again, not entirely all that important to illustrate the point. Enhanced autopilot, obviously the take rate on that in this sort of first scenario would have been 0% because they didn't offer it. FSD recognized, that would have been 55%, roughly. I think it's somewhere in between 50 and 60%. We don't know exactly, but again, until Tesla does wide release, they're not going to recognize all of that. Enhanced autopilot, it would be close to 100%, probably more like 90%, because Tesla will have to at least defer a little bit of revenue to continue to deliver that feature over time. Which is standard practice for more software-related features. So in this first scenario, you have, okay, 55% of this $100 million worth of FSD beta revenue and therefore profit, and you can recognize, you know, $66 million or so based on that sort of a take rate and recognition rate. In the second example, let's say we bring in enhanced autopilot, and okay, the full self-driving take rate drops a little bit. Let's say it gets cut in half down to a hypothetical 5%. Again, not all that important. And let's say the enhanced autopilot take rate ends up being 10%. So You get in aggregate a higher take rate on some sort of autopilot additional option. And in this case, you have that same revenue recognition for FSD, but then you get almost 100% of the enhanced autopilot revenue and therefore profit. And you can see that it shakes out to end up with higher profitability from a mix like this than what Tesla would do with just FSD. So even though the introduction of this option might lower the take rate, the point is that Tesla could still end up generating more profit in the short term from this. Of course, then you don't have as much revenue to recognize on the back end, but because it's a software feature, Tesla can still allow people to upgrade to that over time. So as FSD gets more compelling, it's gonna be, you know, that much more attractive for these people that have taken enhanced autopilot to opt up in FSD. And that will also make that opt up even cheaper. So you get kind of like the stair step feature, which hopefully can yield a better take rate over time too. And if it ultimately gets to a robotaxi situation, Tesla doesn't actually want the take rate on FSD to be all that high, most likely, because they can probably earn more money than what they're selling the feature for these days. The other thing to keep in mind specifically here for Q2, as we've been talking about a lot of the headwinds this quarter with production, with the Bitcoin impairment, with these layoffs, one thing that's nice here is that the current fleet, as we know, with this being a software option, can upgrade. And because this is a new option this quarter, there will probably be a higher take rate on upgrading just because it is new. So that should add some nice, again, almost 100% recognized revenue for Q2 to help offset some of those challenges that we have seen. So that should be a positive for the quarter. Again, it kind of depends on the take rates, and we can't really know how all that's going to shake out, but it's not very difficult to build a scenario where it ends up being a positive. All right, next up here, we've got a little bit of news out of China. So Wuhua hasn't done a ton of drone flyovers recently, obviously, with what's been going on in Shanghai, not a lot of opportunity to do that. But with Tesla's factory now fully open out of the closed loop situation, as we have talked about, we've got a nice drone flyover video here from Wuhua, first time in a while. And probably the most interesting part of this actually appeared in the comments. You can see there's a lot of activity going on here, but Wuhua was kind of asked what the, you know, production rate is right now. And he says, according to informants, the capacity has reached 3,000 units per day. So previously we had talked about 2,600 per day being in Tesla's target for June, sort of 6 days a week at 2,600 per day. And that was on that closed loop system. So there's potential now that Tesla's in this not closed loop situation, more of a normal steady state, could be targeting in a higher rate than what we have seen before, and also perhaps more days of production than what we had originally heard. So obviously we got to take this with a grain of salt for now, but it is interesting to see this sort of information surface. I'll try to do what I can to figure out if this is accurate, and any more information I find on that I'll pass along. So again, not putting a ton of weight in that yet, but it is interesting to see, and could be some upside there if Tesla's actually able to hit that, or has hit that, like this says, to that roughly 70,000 vehicle sort of production target that we'd heard mentioned for June. So that'd be a huge boost for Q2 if possible. All right, the other update that we have out of China is a couple of price increases. So here you can see that Tesla has increased the price to about 280,000 RMB on the opening price Model 3, and about 395,000 RMB on the long range Model Y, which I tried to look at the Wayback Machine, it wasn't loading. I like to just look at that to compare the prices, but we do have a tweet here that kind of covers what the difference is. So for the Model Y long range, that increased by about 19,000 RMB, which is close to $2,800, and then the long range Model 3 increasing by about $2,000. So pretty close to, pretty comparable to what we have seen Tesla do in the United States. So obviously, we'd kind of already gone through that. We won't spend much time, but I do think that that is bullish for the margins as we head into the second half of the year for Tesla. All right, the other news that we've got here is from Bjorn Nyland, Tesla Bjorn, formerly known as. He does a lot of vehicle testing, and he's gotten his hands on a Berlin-made performance Model Y. So he's taken it out and done his efficiency tests on it. In this case, he was testing it at 19 degrees Celsius, external temperature, 90 kilometers per hour speed. And he was getting watt hours per kilometer of 146, which is very comparable to what he was getting with the Tesla Model Y long range with aero wheels, which is actually a kind of an important distinction, at that same speed with similar temperatures. So That's about 55 miles per hour, and he was able to get 317 miles of range out of this performance Model Y, which is actually quite close to what the EPA rating would be. So it looks like the efficiency there is pretty good. Again, this is just a 2170 version right now out of Berlin. But of course, there could be some, you know, iterations that Tesla has made on that with the ramp of production at Berlin. So good to see some initial numbers out of there. And we'll wait and see with a little bit more testing if any of that can be confirmed. Hopefully, I'll do another higher speed test too, because a lot of these are at higher speed, and I think that's a little bit more relevant sometimes, but we'll see. All right, next we've got a couple of updates on jobs, I suppose. So we've been talking a lot about this lately. We've got a report here from Electrek that Tesla has continued its layoffs and actually is starting to lay off some hourly workers as well. Electrek here saying that it includes hourly workers instead of just salaried employees, like Elon Musk claimed. We'll talk about that in a second, but just to wrap up with what they're saying, they say that sources familiar with the matter confirmed to Electrek that Tesla started another wave of layoffs yesterday that included many hourly employees in its sales and delivery teams across North America. So I do want to dispute this for a second, because yes, Elon did say that 10% of salaried employees would be laid off, but at the same time, it was never explicitly stated that that would not include any hourly workers. So if we go back to that email, Elon had said Tesla will be reducing salaried headcount by 10%. Note, this does not apply to anyone actually building cars, battery packs, or installing solar. Hourly headcount will increase. So if you actually read that for what it's actually saying, Elon isn't saying there that no hourly workers would potentially be laid off. He's just saying of salaried it will be 10%, and that hourly headcount will increase, and that no one building cars, battery packs, or installing solar will be laid off. So that doesn't exclude hourly employees that are doing things outside of, you know, those activities. So I do take issue with that, you know, that way of framing it, because it's not entirely accurate. But point being here that Tesla has continued that layoff. So when we're talking about the actual number here, you know, I mentioned before that I'd been told that salaried employees were maybe 10 or 15% of Tesla's workforce. I found that, you know, my expectation would be that it'd be a little bit higher than that. I don't have any source for that information, but if that were the case, it'd be, you know, 1,500 people or so. If Tesla is also doing some hourly workers, then we might need to, you know, have a little bit higher of an expectation, which from a financial perspective, as we head into the Q2 results, would just need to be considered in terms of the, you know, restructuring costs that Tesla will have to recognize, which again, another headwind for Q2. So hopefully that, you know, gives some clear information. We don't really know how many people this is, so there's not much more to say on that until we get, you know, maybe some more concrete numbers or specifically what areas are being reduced here. So then I mentioned another story on jobs. Yesterday we talked about how some employees at SpaceX had written an open letter being critical of Elon Musk and his, you know, expressions on Twitter, some of the things that have been going on lately. So I said we'd kind of wait and get more information. We've got quite a bit more information on this today, so we will spend a little bit of time on it here. SpaceX did end up firing a few employees that were involved in the creation and, oh man, I still have that thing on screen. I'm sorry. My bad, guys. So with the letter here, you can see, or SpaceX ended up firing a few people and that were responsible for the letter. And SpaceX's president, Gwynne Shotwell, did send an email out kind of explaining this decision today. I do think it's worth reading its entirety because this is kind of it's a complicated issue, right? And I think she did a good job of addressing it in as best of a way as possible. So she says, "You may have received an unsolicited request from a small group of SpaceX employees for your signature on a quote-unquote open letter yesterday and your participation in a related survey. Based on diverse employee feedback, this has upset many. That is, the letter, solicitations, and general process made employees feel uncomfortable, intimidated, and bullied, and or angry because the letter pressured them to sign onto something that did not reflect their views. Employees also complained that it interfered with their ability to focus on and do their work. We have 3 launches within 37 hours for critical satellites this weekend, and we have to support the astronauts we delivered to the ISS and get cargo back, and get Cargo Dragon back to the flight, back to the flight ready." A little bit of a typo there. "And after receiving environmental approval earlier this week, We are on the cusp of the first orbital launch attempt of Starship. We have too much critical work to accomplish and no need for this kind of overreaching activism. Our current leadership team is more dedicated to ensuring that we have a great and ever-improving work environment than I've ever seen in my 35-year career. We solicit and expect our employees to report all concerns to their leadership, senior management, HR, or legal, but blanketing thousands of people across the company with repeated unsolicited emails and asking them to sign letters and fill out unsponsored surveys during the workday is not acceptable and goes against our documented handbook policy and does not show the strong judgment needed to work on this very challenging space transportation sector. We performed an investigation and have terminated a number of employees involved. I'm sorry for this distraction. Please stay focused on the SpaceX mission and use your time at work to do your best work. This is how we will get to Mars. All right, so that's the letter. Obviously, I think she explains it well. It's not even necessarily saying that they're not open to the feedback in the letter. It's more of just how this process was gone about. Soliciting thousands of your coworkers to try to get them to assign something that is sort of not necessarily antagonistic against the CEO, but actively and publicly calling out the CEO of a company, probably not the best way to go about handling things when there are areas of disagreement. It kind of reminded me of a situation that we had last year. So this is a very old leaked email, but this was one at Tesla that Elon had sent out, and it was in regard to disagreements that were happening within the company and people not following Elon's directions. So he said, if an email is sent from me with explicit directions, there are only three actions allowed by managers. Email me back to explain why what I said was incorrect. Sometimes I'm just plain wrong. Request further clarification if what I said was ambiguous, or execute the directions. If none of the above are done, that manager will be asked to resign. So again, it's not like Elon is completely unwilling to receive feedback. I'm sure that at times that can be difficult, but going about it in this way is clearly not a path that is going to be something that is tolerated, that can very quickly and easily start to sow discontent within the workforce. Obviously becomes a risk to the entire culture of the organization. So even if the feedback is, to an extent, has some validity to it, is just the wrong way to go about doing it, I think. Or even if not the wrong way, something that is very likely not going to be tolerated by pretty much any organization. That being said, there are still things to consider here, because apparently, according to The Verge, even though this was only out for about 36 hours, apparently more than 400 SpaceX employees signed the open letter. Again, SpaceX was just firing the people that were sort of instigating this, that were writing the letter and soliciting the feedback or soliciting the signatures. But that's still a pretty significant number in that period of time. I think SpaceX has, 12 to 15,000 employees, so maybe 2 to 3% of the organization in that short of time. And again, knowing that there could be repercussions for signing a letter like this. As far as that percentage, again, that's the entire SpaceX organization. Apparently, this was shared out to, roughly 2,600 team members. So again, the percentage on that would be even higher, somewhere around like 5% in that range. So it is, like we had talked about yesterday, I do think that there are things in this letter that Elon should probably consider. I hope that it doesn't cause Elon to just sort of like double down on those type of actions. It very well could. I don't necessarily disagree with the things Elon has to say. It's more just about how sometimes it's being approached. I think from Elon's perspective, it's kind of like, work hard, focus on the mission, and like that's kind of it, and that's all that needs to be done and needs to be said. And I think that stance at times, especially with organizations like Elon is trying to lead and the missions that those organizations have, that's very valid. But at the same time, I think there's a better way to go about handling some of these things sometimes. So it's difficult to kind of convey the entirety of my thoughts on this, especially on a live stream where I'm not going to word things perfectly, but that's kind of the gist. Like, I understand the action, the reaction, and hopefully there's something to take away here that can move things in a positive direction. I guess that's how I'd say it. All right, last kind of thing here, just to not end on such a down note talking about layoffs and SpaceX firings. We do have another Tesla insurance expansion here. So we've been talked in the last couple of days about news of Tesla filing for New Jersey, Maryland, and Florida. We now have an update on Tesla's site that they have added Tesla insurance to Nevada as well. If we go back to our map here, we can see that Nevada is almost 1% of U.S. automotive registrations. So if we add that to our total, including New Jersey, Maryland, and Florida, we're getting up to about 37% coverage of the U.S. And again, these seem to be popping up kind of every day. Not that that rate is going to continue, but I'm sure Tesla is working on these in other states as well. So good to see that continued rapid expansion of Tesla insurance. And I think that'll do it for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and sign up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. Again, markets are closed on Monday, so we will probably see you on Tuesday for, I believe,